Welcome to the EU Energy Projects podcast, a podcast series from Enlit and Friends, focusing on the clean energy transition for the European Union and the EU Commission-funded energy projects that will help us achieve it. My name is Areti Daradimu. I am the editor of the EU Energy Projects podcast and your host. Project EDI is the first data space to bring real-time consumer data into markets. It focuses on reducing cost of data sharing, making data interoperable, and managing consumer consent. The whole endeavor isn't without challenges. For example, flexibility management, as well as concerns regarding data access and security. I had the opportunity to discuss Project EDI with Laurent Schmidt during Enlit Europe 2023. Together, we touched on topics such as the importance of robust EU regulations in data protection, cybersecurity, cost efficiency, and Europe's competitiveness in cloud and data spaces compared to countries such as China and the US. EDI is the first data space to bring real-time consumer data into markets. Can you elaborate and explain a little bit what this is?
Yes, so basically what we see is the one of the challenges right now is the flexibility and the management of flexibility into grids. And what we see as well in the meantime is the majority of distributed energy resources are now being deployed at the consumer level, where we talk about heat pump, electrical vehicle, and so forth. One of the challenges is really to think on how to bring the right data back into the operation of these markets, whether these flexibility markets are operated at TSO or DSO level. And so we are really thinking from a different perspective. One is to reduce the cost of sharing this data, so using open source and so on, making this data more interoperable, very, very important. And last but not least, it's because it's behind the meter data. These are private data from the consumer. So you need to manage the consent. You need to bring the consumer on board, and you need to be transparent to the consumer on what's the value proposition in terms of flexibility, participation into the market, and so on. All of that in a way that it is fully automated. So the consumer must be able to opt, must understand the value proposition. But once he has opted in, it must be automated, because you don't want people to look at their mobile phone every minute to trade flexibility.
Okay, so let's divide it in two categories. One, before you take the consent, and one after.
Yeah.
How do you take the consent? It's not an easy thing.
No, it's not an easy thing, as what you say. So our customer journey starts with the consumer buying a product. Very, very important. So when you look at an electrical vehicle or a heat pump, you don't go to your grid operator for buying an electrical vehicle and heat pump. You actually go to your car dealer or to your heat pump dealer. So the first thing is, a consumer is interested to build a net zero home and wants a heat pump. So he's looking at heat pumps and so on. He finds in installers, he selects a heat pump. And then at that time comes the fact that this heat pump is, in 99% of the case nowadays, connected. So it is connected to internet. Mm-hmm. And at that time, this is in the customer journey the first time where a manufacturer of the heat pump is starting to manage consumer data. And so at that time, there must be a first step of managing the privacy associated of this set of data. The consumer probably already have a smart meter. And so, of course, he has already, if he's interested by energy data, he has already provided consent to the DSO to be able to either use the data herself or himself, or share it with someone else for certain energy management scheme. The same thing would happen in a car. The consumer is going to buy an EV, is going to provide a consent of the data, of sharing the data to the car manufacturer as a first step. So what EDI wants to create is a layer which allows to combine this consent for the purpose of the consumer, so that what EDI would like to do is new layer of services to be built on the top of these EVs, heat pump, and so on, particularly into the flexibility domain, so that when you buy a car which is bidirectional, or you buy a heat pump, it kind of offers automatically the option to opt for the service of flexibility. So if I summarize, you install your heat pump, you give your consent to use the app of the heat pump, and then the next step in the journey is you give the consent for using the data of your heat pump into your flexibility market. And each tab is a different consent. Each step, so if we want to be absolutely aligned with the Data Act, that means that when you ask the consent, you must be totally transparent to the consumer why you are asking this consent for. So what is the purpose, who manages the processing of the data, and all these kind of things.
Transparency, that is clear. That takes a lot of time, doesn't it?
From a consumer perspective? Or
yeah.
Actually, not so much, because if you it gives the impression that it is a regular process. It's actually happening when you install the device. When you have a heat pump at home, you start thinking, how am I going to operate? How am I going to heat my house? And all that kind of things. At that time, I would say you're going to naturally give the consent to the heat pump manufacturer. Okay, I want to control my home remotely, so I do it with your app, so I give you the consent. So these are actually milestones in the customer journey, which are not like you need to think about it every day. It's just when you install the device, you give the consent over a certain time for sharing the information with different service provider. What is very important into this process is what we can see is it's not a single consent. It's several consents. So the question is, how do you administrate these various consents together?
Before we go to the after the consent part,
yes.
I have another question that has to do with smart meters.
Yes.
Not every country has smart meters. Mm-hmm. So this limits a little bit the audience, let's say, of EDI. Isn't that right?
Not really, because what we are doing in EDI is, of course, we start with the smart metering data infrastructure, but we also anticipate the new regulation on flexibility, which is likely to enable sub-metering, what we call in the text dedicated measurement device, which are basically, when you are in a country where smart metering are too slow to deploy and so on, this text is probably going to authorize the usage of other measurements with your heat pump, with your car charging, as a way to settle and manage your energy. So I think EDI also covered that piece in the sense that I was talking about all consumer data, means okay. Data from the DER and data from the smart meters. And we if you look at one of our main use cases called residential energy management for net zero home, where we project really the entire integration of EV, heat pump, everything in future electrified home. And that's really where we try to integrate, I would say, the holistic view of all the energy management data and sub-metering coming from this net zero home.
So let's go now to the after you get the consent. What's the procedure? What do you do?
So once the consent is obtained, then is comes the issue of sharing the information and sharing the right information. So here the first step is how can you bring visibility about the available information? So coming back to the heat pump, the consumer has given his consent for using the app. So now there is the question of how can the consumer see the potential other apps which can operate on the basis of this data? So basically, we create what we call a marketplace, which allows basically to visualize what are all the data sets available in the consumer environment so that service providers can come and propose consumers, okay, if you give me access to this new set of data, which you have already consented for a certain supplier, I'm going to offer you something more. I'm going to offer you flexibility, fast flexibility, slow flexibility, and so on. And me, as a service provider, I'm going to pick only the few set of data which I need for proposing this to you. So that means that if you share your data for a fridge, you're not going to have the same service provider as with a car charging station because the fridge is not operating into a fast frequency response market, but an EV is capable of doing it. because of the accuracy of the measurement and the data which is available into the charging point.
So basically your audience is not only the end consumer, it's the utility, yes. Also energy communities, I would say, right?
So that's what we call service providers. Yeah. So that's all kind of parties offering different offers, can be aggregators, energy flexibility service provider. You are absolutely right, an energy community wishing to share energy between consumer. And that's this layer which glue basically the interaction between service provider and consumers.
Data spaces have been very important the last years for the European Commission.
Yes.
DG Connect specifically, yes. But also DGNR.
Yes.
Do you think that the Commission came a little bit late to the game? Because I've been hearing about data centers in Denmark, for example, yeah. And EnergyNet for a decade almost.
Yeah, so I think there is a bit of a misunderstanding what is a data space.
Fair enough. Let's explain this first.
So, I would explain it as a simple way, which is an environment where you can share data.
Yeah.
Okay, that's very simple to understand. That does not mean a single cloud, very, very important, mm-hmm. a single data center.
Yeah.
And what we have seen clearly into the first steps of this data space project, like with Eddie, is not going to be one cloud. You don't want this to be. It's going to be a federation of cloud.
Okay.
And so basically what is really new into the commission approach is how do you federate clouds from different companies, partners, utilities through the right sets of data exchange. That's one element. While ensuring sovereignty of data mm-hmm. and location of data in Europe and protection of data. We need to keep in mind, and I would quickly relate this to the cybersecurity network codes, where whether we want it or not, if you are looking at data coming from a solar PV inverter or car chargers, the way you, when as soon as you're going to scale aggregation of this device, the hacking of this infrastructure is going to create obviously an issue for the consumer, but also for the entire system, because potentially you're going to be able to unbalance the generation and loads on a very short term, which could create a significant power swing into the system. So here, behind the data space, there is also a cybersecurity element, which is very important. So it was interesting. Is one of the in one of the panels which I was the chairing yesterday on data cloud and so on. Mm-hmm. That was very interesting to see how each a layer of the value chain. We had in this panel a TSO Elia. We had an aggregator Calusa. We had a data center provider Microsoft, mm-hmm. and also Siemens more onto the low voltage part of the system. Yeah. And there was a broad agreement about the fact that it's not going to be one cloud, it's going to be a hybrid cloud environment with interoperability being required. And that's what is really this data space about. So that's actually a very right moment to put this on the table.
Excellent. Now, a question that might sound a little bit stupid, but I will ask it nevertheless.
No stupid question.
Well, obviously, that comes at a cost.
Yeah.
When we have universities,
yeah.
when we have, let's say, students, schools, will you share for free?
Yeah,
for research purposes?
Yeah, that's. I think what you raise as an interesting question is the broad monetization model, which is behind. So there's few elements into it. First, I think what we try to aim for in the data space is to reduce the cost of operating this infrastructure. In EDI, we use a lot of open source. The communication layer for the technology specialist is referred as Kafka, which is a very, very known platform environment, originally built, I think, by LinkedIn and shared broadly.
Kafka, you said.
Kafka. It's a magic word into this environment.
And for literal, not literal, literature aficionados.
I'm not sure it's the same.
Sure it's not, but yeah.
But just to say that we want to use open source at this layer to minimize the, transaction cost of operating this joint infrastructure. So that's the first element. Now, The second element is you have necessarily two kind of data. You have data which are free in the sense that a smart meter has been invested by a regulated entity, which is a DSO, okay, for the purpose of the society. And so basically from that point of view, because it is paid as part of a regulated tariff, I would say the access to this data is free, provided the privacy is covered. That's of course a very important element. Then you have cases which are a bit more complex, like if I take an heat pump company, if I take an EV charging or battery and so on, you have cases basically where, first of all, the company has a model which is service-based. So he's not selling the hardware as an hardware, but as a service to the consumer. So that means there is cost associated to the implementation of that. And so the accessing of that data cannot be seen as free, because this company has been, I would say, investing into this, has been developing IP into this data. And so we should respect that accessing to some data is going to be paid, and some others is going to be free. And that's why I call this as a marketplace. It's going to be up to the service provider looking at the value he can create versus the value he can find into this marketplace. And it's going to trick, I should not use this very fast real-time information because it's actually costly to acquire it. And it does not have value in view of the service which I'm interested to offer to a grid operator, as an example. So that's really what is behind this data space environment.
The reason why I asked is because I've participated in many conversations with Rescope and BAUC.
Yeah.
And they're very much into data ownership,
yeah,
and ownership for the individual that actually produces the data.
Yeah, correct.
So I'm not saying that this is the correct way or the other is the correct way. I'm just saying that if an association like Rescope, for example, BUC, represents the X community that you want to collaborate with,
yes,
how are you going to tackle the issue that they're going to tell you, yeah, but we want this to be democratized?
So there's various elements into your questions. The first question is the privacy question. So I think in Europe we have the GDPR and the Data Act, and we should...
Data anonymity, right? We can,
yes,
have also.
Yeah. And we should respect it. So if you buy an equipment, whether it's leased, it's bought as an hardware, and as a user of that equipment, you are basically allowed to access to this data, and this is your data, and you decide to whom you share this data. This is a very, very important fundamental starting point. Then comes the question of how can I share this data? And here, there are cloud costs, there are infrastructure costs, which we should not be naive about. And so basically, there are costs of sharing certain data. So basically, accessing to your monthly value of kilowatt hour for a home is probably negligible cost. Accessing to your kilowatt value every millisecond is a very costly infrastructure from a cloud point of view. And that's where I would say we should be realistic, that once again, yes, some layers need to be open source, some cost needs to be the lowest as possible from an infrastructure point of view. There is some element of crowdsourcing also, some element of development. I'm hearing very often in energy communities, consumers themselves are interested to create, and that's true. This is the principle of the open source community. But at some stage, I think we should also not be too naive, is that if we want community to scale, there should be at some stage some commercial model to emerge from for some software company or energy management company to be able to package something which is easy to implement, which is deployable, as flexible as possible, provided the consumer has provided the consent. So that means the consumer should say, yeah, I'm interested by this service, I give the data, and so I can access to this environment. So I think the naivety of some of the approach sometimes is to think that this community or their own will develop the tool themselves. It's not the case. I'm in an energy community in Paris, for instance, because I'm a big fan of that, which does PV on schools and so on, with a lot of passionate people. But it's not because you are passionate on energy transition that you suddenly become you know, a developer of Kafka or whatever database, or an integrator of technology, I think there is space for some company to emerge in that space. That does not mean like the big cloud provider, that can be, I would say, smaller scale company like ours, for instance, talking about Decibel as an example, which then can play a role into facilitating this integration of data and basically repackaging in different formats, standardized formats, for lowering the cost to the community and so on. So this is not necessarily like everything should be free. I think everything should be cost efficient. That's what is important. So that means cost efficient in view of the benefit to the consumer.
Well put. Since you know a lot about data spaces, about cloud, data sharing, etc., I wanted to ask you, how competitive is Europe compared to the States, China, I will put Russia even there, why not? Given the fact that already one of the companies you mentioned is an American one, Microsoft.
Yeah, so that's that raised the question of the sovereignty of data.
And I love how you turn my questions into the proper
and
things.
So you're right that the majority of cloud vendors today are from the US. And so we need to either convince these people to build data center and technology in Europe, in which case they could become acceptable European technology on their way, which could be a direction for American companies, and also let the innovation and the smartness of Europe. I very often say that the case is done and so on. I don't agree with this at all. I mean, we are a recognized community of innovators in Europe and in some domains, and particularly software startups and all that kind of things. And I don't think the case is done for everything will happen in the US and in US data centers. So data space brings back, I would say, a balance, like put the data in Europe, put the infrastructure in Europe, and facilitate an ecosystem in Europe, which is good. Mm-hmm. Which is good. Now, the case of Russia and China is a bit sensitive to me.
Sorry, before we go there, I would like to stay a little bit more in the United States and the example of Microsoft, Amazon, etc., because it's not only Microsoft.
Yeah.
We talk about GDPR,
yeah.
We talked about the GDPR and safety.
Yeah.
And still, the EU Commission is fighting these companies,
yeah,
and Google, etc.,
yeah,
on this topics.
Yeah.
How can we be sure that they will really respect the European laws?
This is with large fines, and this is what we see progressing while the European laws develop. That's not going to happen so it takes time. But what being, I would say, foots on the two sides of the ocean, we do have activities in California, for instance, and so on. What I can tell you is US takes the European laws very seriously. That's a good news. Huh? That's not like something I don't care. They are trying, going into the new direction. I also see different strategies from different cloud vendors. Some don't really care. Some others do care a lot. I would name, for instance, Microsoft. I think Microsoft is doing a lot of effort into that space. And that was one of the topic of the panel yesterday, as an example, just to name one. And once again, when you do a lot of effort, what does that mean? That means that these companies are anyway large international company. They have physical infrastructure in Europe.
Yeah.
They have data located in Europe. And so it's putting, I would say, the right governance into their own environment, so that they can demonstrate in case of an audit that they play, I would say, the game of this. And then you've got other European data center companies which are perfectly fit for competing with these companies. The game is definitely not made, and I do see some interesting cases. I want to come to cases of Russia and China. I'm going to have, I would say, words which maybe are going to be a bit controversial, but I do believe into this vision, so I want to say it. So I think we should not be naive in Europe anymore that it is the there is a strategic and a geopolitical battle technologically between these continents, US, Europe, China and Russia. Russia is an extremely difficult case because of the war and all what happens. So there's absolutely no possibility for cooperating with the, in my view, in terms of risks and cyber risks in particular. So I think that would be one. Regarding China, I also have some concern in the sense that their market is not open to our European technologies. They've gone very strong into certain domains, like in the solar inverter domains, where they have they are managing a lot of portfolio of residential assets and managing data in Chinese data centers. And so that, let's be honest, that represents a cyber risk. And who can say that basically we can ourselves protect against rules of data centers being governed in China? No one. So I think we need to have a serious look at that. And I think we should impose clear barriers to these countries, especially when it comes to the Industrial Net Zero Act, where Europe wants to push its own ecosystem, wants to create a strong industry ecosystem around this, I would say, Repower EU new development. And so it is the time to do it, and it is the time to put the right technology barriers to prevent being too naive towards a Chinese company.
When you say the right technology barriers, can you elaborate a little bit on that?
So that means imposing the same requirements onto this Chinese company, like locating the data center, locating their development staff in Europe, being true European companies like what American companies are trying to do. And I'm sorry, it's not the case today. I know a few cases of house having some inverter from a Chinese brand, and the these cases, this consumer wanted to have access to their data, and it was not possible, first of all. And then after a few trials, they realized that actually, oh, their data is just located in China.
Okay, yeah. That's shocking a little bit.
That's shocking. Let's be honest, if we would switch off the entire fleet of Chinese inverter today in Europe, we would have serious issue with our grids. So that gives you...
example.
Gives you... I don't like to speak too much on that because I think we should not threaten too much. But that shows the what is at stake. And as European, we have the strengths to build an industry which is robust, which is smart, and we have a large market. So we can also impose our rules in our way, and we do it with the Data Act and with GDPR. We are the reference in the world when it comes to data protection, and we need to continue to do that.
Excellent. Anything else you would like to mention that I didn't ask, perhaps?
Maybe the just want to relate one element to this AD. Why I think this AD is going to be quite a game changer in the coming years. Is the this is related to the car development and what we see into the domain of bidirectional charging, vehicle to grid, vehicle to home, and so on, where we have really observed, I would say, in the last 6 months, a kind of a shift in the mindset of the electrical vehicle manufacturers about moving into the next mile of this bidirectional charging. That's going to be a game changer, because the day you have a car, an EV, which you can also operate as a storage into your home, then you truly become a prosumer, and you truly need to transact and manage your flexibility into the broad perspective. And so that's where I think the combination of this new technology coming into the market with the technology layer we have in mind onto AD could be really a winning case around integrating prosumer into markets.
Would you venture a guesstimate, let's say, of the time frame for EVs to become, let's say, the norm, because they're very expensive still, right?
They are expensive, but we see they develop well into continental European markets. That's absolutely clear. What we see into the roadmap is around 30 million EV by 2035.
That's nice.
And what we see in the meantime is today we have around 10 million houses with solar PV, and with the acceleration of the solar PV regulation, we think we need to triple or quadruple a rooftop PV in Europe. We think that within 2035 there will be probably around 30 million homes requiring also solar PV. So I think it's rather credible that we will have around 30 million houses to be equipped between now and 2035 with these kind of technologies. So that is really massive. Today we have, I would say, around 10 million homes with PV.
Now we have already, okay.
Yeah, so it's from 10 million, which would took us probably 20 years, into 30 million probably in 5 years.
Excellent. Okay, that's a nice and optimistic way to close.
Definitely.
Okay,
and it's
thank you.
Very good time.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You've been listening to the EU Energy Projects podcast, a podcast brought to you by Enlit and Friends. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, and the Enlit World website. Just hit subscribe, and you can access our other episodes too. I'm Areti Daradimu. Thank you for joining us.